TSN 690.
Welcome back. It is hour number four. Melnick in the afternoon. A little late start, later than normal for hour number four. Thanks again to Tim Raines for joining us for about 25 minutes from Dunedin, where he's working with the Blue Jays outfielders, a minor league complex, and we'll be here with the Blue Jays as he has been for the last couple of years. That'll be a moment. That'll be a moment at the Big O, which I frankly hadn't thought of in the aftermath of his Hall of Fame announcement. Maybe another reason to go out to the Big O and then leave before the first pitch. And then, of course, a bash to end all bashes in Cooperstown induction weekend with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo. Mitch Melnick until 7 o'clock.
I know the game just ended, but you could not have not heard the Roger chant late in the game. What are your thoughts on that? And are you comfortable knowing that becomes a storyline going into this Super Bowl?
I didn't hear that chant. So I did hear him singing to Bon Jovi, though. That was pretty cool.
Let's see how many more Roger Goodell-related questions Tom Brady can deflect over the next couple of weeks. Joining us off the set of the reporters at TSN every Monday night at this time, award-winning writer and broadcaster Michael Farber. How you doing?
Where is Roger?
Yeah, well, we know he was in the dome yesterday.
That's right. Now, if you're the National Football League, you can put your hands over your ears and go, la, 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 I can't hear, and pretend that the New England Patriots are in a terrific team and that you might not see them in the Super Bowl. And you can deflect all of this most of it, if Roger Goodell on some Sunday in October or November just saunters up to Foxborough, and there is Roger Goodell at the Patriots, so it doesn't become a story that consumes the premier event of the league. And no matter how hard he tries, Roger Goodell, you know, isn't going to be washing his hair. He's not going to have a dentist appointment, you know, 2 weeks from yesterday. He's got to confront it, and now it threatens to be the biggest story, all because the NFL didn't undermine it, didn't take the air out of it, if you will, earlier on.
Is this achievement even sweeter this year because you guys were given the additional hurdle of playing the first four games of the year without Tom?
No. Like, every year has its own challenges. Whatever they are. Every team faces them. Every team has to deal with them. We've dealt with them. Other teams have dealt with them, whatever it happens to be, so it's a special year because it's a special team and it's a special group in the way they've worked together, but there are always challenges that we have to overcome, and whatever those are, they are.
Might be the dumbest suspension in the history of sports.
Oh, yeah. It was ridiculous right from the start, where there's two locker room attendants. I forget their names. I call them Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, for those of you who remember your Hamlet, two minor figures in all this. And what might have been at worst gamesmanship, punishable by a fine, $25,000, $50,000, who knows? But that takes care of it. And instead, you ended up sitting the premier player, arguably, in your game, the premier quarterback in your game. And who wins all this? Well, the Patriots have won. And for Bill Belichick to say what he just said, oh, it's not sweeter, I think that's known as alternative fact. I don't believe him. It's not disprovable. But I still can't imagine that this whole 2016 and now 2017 run by the Patriots isn't a giant act of vengeance against the NFL.
Michael, what was your opinion of Roger Goodell when he took over from Paul Tagliabue? Because when he got that job, I'm a big football fan. I looked at him with a certain amount of reverence. He seemed to be exuding the right qualities. The league was a powerhouse, a behemoth. And then you look at what's happened the last 5 years or so, basically half his term. You've got the NFL officials lockout. You had a players lockout that didn't cost them games but still cost them stability. Ray Rice, gun violence, head trauma issues. Lately, three teams looks like they'll be moving in the next couple years, depending on what happens with the Raiders. the TV ratings from this year, whether it's because of the election or not. He seems to be dealing with a lot of negatives.
And he doesn't seem to be handling them all well. I mean, the Chargers moved to Los Angeles. This is a city that was quite happy with zero NFL teams and is now saddled with two. I think when you go back to Goodell's first year, what appealed to many people is the same appeal that Donald Trump has to many people. There was an authoritarian streak in Goodell, especially early on. And no matter what people say, they often like to be told what to do. And this was somebody who told people, I'm the new sheriff, we're going to do it my way. And after Paul Tagliabue, this was, if not refreshing, at least there was a marked contrast in the way these two men were going to lead. And Goodell was going to clean up the game and hold people accountable. Well, in order to lead, you need a certain amount of consensus. You need to be able to work with your employees and not just tell your employees. And, of course, there is the dichotomy here we see in sports all the time. You are a commissioner. You are the boss of the owners, essentially, and rather than the good of the game, you're working for the group 30 or 32 or 31, whatever it might be at a certain time, you're working for them. And so Roger Goodell tried to extend his power. He at times didn't know what he was doing because he was going to be everything to everybody, and it hit him in the butt.
This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period.
Wait, what do you mean people like to be told what to do? Because I don't like to be told what to do.
No, of course, you don't. But there's always a strong leader, and people throughout history, Mitch, have liked authoritarian leaders. It scratches an itch. I'll go back to the Brothers Karamazov. What an unusual segment today. We've hit Hamlet.
Shakespeare now, and Dostoevsky now.
Dostoevsky, there's the Brothers Karamazov. And tucked in there is a section called the Grand Inquisitor, where Jesus comes back and the Grand Inquisitor says, we got to get rid of this guy because people don't want him. Now, because he's speaking about freedom. No, that's not good because most people want to be told what to do. And this is how we end up with authoritarian people. And if you look around the globe, people seem quite comfortable with strong leaders. Occasionally you get a spasm and there are revolutions. Quite often those revolutions are led by the military, they're coup d'etat, and one strong leader is replaced by another strong leader. Yeah, you don't like to be told what to do. I certainly don't like to be told what to do, but there's a segment of the population globally, and that's apparently is what Sean Spicer was talking about, although he has no numbers to back it up. He has no idea what television ratings for the Trump inauguration were globally. He was just making it up. But this is what I've just derailed my own train of thought.
Get you back on. I think Michael Farber has just given the best description of Donald Trump as president of the United States 4 days into his tenure. He's a spasm. Nicely done.
Well, that wasn't. It's the need to be told what to do, and there are lots of people who feel that need, believe it or not.
And you feel a need to cover the NHL All-Star Game in Los Angeles? Really?
Yeah, because I'm being paid.
Oh.
No, I do some consulting work for NBC, and I'll be going out there, and there's going to be a little round table with some good young players, including Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews, and I'm going to be involved with that. I'm going to be interviewing some of the legends. The 100 greatest players in NHL history. And it's curious, and I'm sure most people have recognized this, they're not ranked 1 to 100. And there's an obvious benefit to that. You're just saying these are our great players, and all we're going to do is start fights if we rank Gretzky first and Bobby Orr second and Luke Robitaille 79th and Bob Gainey 100th. So there are issues.
There's a lot of people groaning right now, Michael.
But there's also, and that's the problem, there's also interest. Lists interest people, rankings interest people. And I think the NHL, while not wanting to insult their legends, have let down some of their fans who want to engage the league in that way. It's the same thing with NHL.com not wanting to put salaries of players on their list. Oh, Gary Bettman said, oh, fans aren't interested. Well, yeah, they are. This is a salary cap league, and it's something that should be there because fans are engaged just as they are engaged with rankings. And I think I understand the rationale, but I see where it can bite them in the ankles.
Finishing up with Michael Farber.
Now a Pozo, Ristolainen, glove save! A game saver by Carey Price! How about that?
One of 35 saves Saturday night against the Buffalo Sabres. They lost in overtime, and a lot of people have been waiting for that moment for a while. Is Carey Price back, Michael?
I'm not sure. The best game he's played in the last month or so was in Nashville. You recall that game. He was good. He made a great save there. Robin Lehner followed that up with perhaps an even better save. He's working his way back, but Carey Price is going to be about W's. The goals blocker side, I don't know enough about the position to know if it's what the problem is technically. But for me, it's a lot. And a lot of it's been poor handling the puck. I mean, Mike Smith and Ben Bishop are the three best in the league, but Price hasn't been as sharp as usual. The goalies go through this. Henrik Lundqvist went through it. He's gone through it a little bit this year. He's gone through it in the past. It's a little bit up and down. So long-term, I have no concerns at all about Carey Price. Is he back? Well, we've seen him better.
Michael Farber, normally every Monday a little after 6 on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. Thanks as always. A spasm.
Okay, it looked like 1.5 million people, whatever it was. But it went all the way back to the Washington Monument. And I turn on, and by mistake, I get this network. And it showed an empty field. And it said, we drew 250,000 people. Now, that's not bad, but it's a lie. We had 250,000 people literally around, in the little ball that we constructed. That was 250,000 people. The rest of the, 20 block area all the way back to the Washington Monument was packed. So we caught them, and we caught them in a beauty. And I think they're going to pay a big price.